now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to the game, the one and only football podcast from The Times. That's right, there are no other football podcasts from The Times. There's a politics podcast to which I hope to be invited on one day. So what you can do, if you like, is you can sign the petition just after you've signed the petition to save Jeremy Clarkson's job, if you're so inclined. I am joined by the excellent Alison Rudd, Clive Petty, the very talented Clive Petty, and Rory Smith. Coming up on the show today, we don't need a debate because there are three big Premier League games to talk about, and we start at Turf Moor.
Trippier and Jones stand over the free kick. It's Trippier who takes it. Away by Kompany. Boyd! Lift off for Burnley. What a sweetly struck shot. And Manchester City are in real trouble.
Why do we experience this ennui when we see City play? What happened?
I don't know. It's just what happens whenever... They should stop winning the title, isn't it? Every time they win the title, the next season, it's just... They just... It's as if, well, we've done it now. We've proved we can do it. Why bother? They look like a team with no real ambition. I don't know whether they're actually thinking that... All their thoughts had gone towards Barcelona on Wednesday night. It certainly looked that way, and I'm not quite sure. Surely, I just think it's an easier task to stay in the title race than go to Barcelona.
As our excellent colleague James Ducker writes this morning, when this happened under Mancini, the theory was, oh, Mancini's too dictatorial, he's too authoritarian, too brutalist, and the players don't like it. So they go in and do the sensible thing and get the exact opposite. They get Pellegrini, who's kind of avuncular and quite a nice bloke and all that. And he's an arm around the shoulder, a carrot rather than a stick. And then now it's not working again. They failed to kind of pass the ultimate test for a team, which is not just to win the title, but then to retain the title and kind of establish a dynasty. And because there is no other explanation for it, they've not suddenly become bad players, there's not loads of injuries. You kind of wonder whether it has to be something to do with the kind of the chemistry of the squad.
What strikes me now, though, is... the parallel with Mancini, I think, only goes so far for the reasons you outlined. But I look at this, and obviously there's suggestions that, you know, they're going to move on from Pellegrini. But I'm wondering is, if you do move on, I think you're kind of limited in what you can do. Because I did the sum somewhere, but something like 17 of the 21 most frequently used City players this year will be 28 or older when the season begins. Now, they're not old because they're all sort of in that 28 to 32 age range, but this is a team built to win now. Mm. And you're not going to be able to raise money to overhaul the squad by selling them unless you sell Aguero or Silva, because the other guys are kind of difficult to sell because they're all on huge wages. And, I think Aguero's really the only one who could fetch you sort of that £50 million, which you could then reinvest. But
I think there's a market for.
Yeah, possibly Silva, but to some degree. But that's what makes it so difficult. So if they do make a change, they kind of have to do it with this group of players and try to win now rather than try to build something a year or two down the line, because they're all going to get old at once.
At some point, they have to build something down the line. I mean,
but it's weird.
You seem to be advocating complete short-termism, girl.
But you kind of have to, because this is kind of... And I wonder if maybe this is a choice that... You know, you throw at Beguiristein, right? Because or whoever built the squad, because it's age wise, There's these guys, they're called 21st Club. There's a guy named Omar Chowdhury or something. You're nodding, like you know him.
I'm aware of them, yeah.
But basically, they're analytics people, and they kind of tell you what the best balance is age-wise in your squad. And it's obvious that they would look at City and they would freak out, because it's very unusual to have a squad with so few young players and so few veterans, and so many guys locked into big contracts. Even Demichelis is another year after this one. So most of these guys will necessarily be back next year, and I think in that situation, maybe you should try to you kind of have to try to win now with Pellegrini, because it's otherwise you really go into a very long rebuilding process if you bring in somebody else.
Hasn't their buy thing as well kind of failed? I mean, when they have bought in people, like, as you say, they spent a lot of money on a centre-back who's not anywhere near that team at the moment and is being kept out by said Demichelis, who Saturday, I should say, looked like the Demichelis had turned up first time out, and you wonder what's going on there too, because he looked quite solid at some point, and perhaps he's fallen under the same sort of malaise as company has at the moment. And I think that, again, that's half the problem, that those people they kind of rely on aren't rocking up or coming up to the plate, and so the ones underneath them have got, there's nothing to haul them up to that kind of level at the moment, and that's got to be kind of worrying, isn't it? I mean,
well, they're kind of in that situation with all teams who want to have success immediately and who set that up as their. I mean, obviously, all teams want success immediately, but those, the Chelseas, the Man Cities, the teams who say, right, we are going to win now, PSG, and I'm trying not to use the term new money, but there is an element of that. They have that problem. No, but there's a factor, isn't it? You get a rich person who comes in and buys a club, they want to win immediately. So yeah. They go out and buy Ibrahimovic and Cavani and Lovetzi, and they say, right, go on, win the Champions League. And that's kind of how it works. But all those teams have a problem, which is that at some point you do have to think. It's very hard to think long-term and short-term at the same time.
But I think maybe one difference with PSG is that, they have guys like Marquinhos and Verratti and Rabiot who are all quite young.
Yeah.
Lucas
and
Moura.
Chelsea as well have got Hazard and Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea have been winning for 10 years, which is slightly different. Yeah. But City, it's just a very unusual spread of players age-wise. And for me, I would sit down with Pellegrini at the end of the season and say, like, hey, what went wrong? Can you fix this? We can make one big signing, two big signings, and otherwise you're going to have to work with these guys, and can you win with them? And I would expect him to say, if he seems motivated and he says yes, then you give it another year. Because otherwise, you could enter a cycle where, because you're limited, you can't spend your way out of this. This academy that they spent all this money on, this season, they've had two academy products who played in the first team in the league this season, okay? This is after building the state-of-the-art bazillion-dollar academy. They got the fancy scouts in from goodness knows where. The two guys are, one is Dedrick Boyata, who, is clearly just there to fulfill a homegrown player requirement. And in any case, he came through the academy before they built the academy. And the other one is Jose Pozo, who they signed from Real Madrid when he was, 16, 17 years old. But it's kind of absurd. There's nobody else knocking on the door or getting any kind of playing time.
But it doesn't matter what... They built the academy last year. It doesn't matter what the academy looks like in terms of getting players into the first team in this short term. That's an investment that will pay off in 5-10 years, not now.
Okay, but these guys bought the club in 2009, right?
Yeah, and they've not done it. I think they probably would admit they've not done enough on youth development.
Well, I haven't spent many private moments with Khaldun, let alone
Sheikh Mansour. Very few people do, but you. I think they probably would acknowledge, and I think if you look at the building of the City Football Academy, that probably is an acknowledgement that is the next stage of the development. But the problem is bridging those two eras, that era where you spend loads of money on players to win now, on Yaya Toure and what have you, and then the kind of let's try and build a team for 5 or 6 years' time. That's the problem they've got.
The remarkable thing about Burnley, for those who don't know, is obviously they get promoted. They decide to spend no money whatsoever, really, on the team. I think their highest paid player makes less than half what City's lowest paid player makes. And they kind of got into it, and it's not just that they're overmatched when they play City, they're overmatched in terms of wages and resources when they play, their peers, Leicester and Hull and QPR and whatever else, really badly overmatched. And yet it works. Do we heap praise on Sean Dyche as a result, or is there a broader message, a broader secret to this?
No, we do heap praise. Yeah. Because he was, there were lots of jokes about him, because most of his press conferences were the same. And I think the secret, if they do stay up, which they might, is that he believes what he's saying, and I think he's made sure all the players believe it. There's no point wallowing in self-pity and saying, oh, yeah, we just don't have the resources. What you have to do is say, look, okay, we accept it, we know it's different, but we can now ignore it because we know it's the truth and just play our brand of football and keep optimistic. And it's a bit fairy tale like, but it looks like it might just work.
Well, what I find remarkable about this guy is that his entire squad is made up of English speaking players. I think he's got one dude from like somewhere in Scandinavia who presumably speaks English as well, who never plays. And the rest, they're all British and Irish, which, not that there's anything wrong with being British or Irish, but certainly in the global marketplace, if you are, especially if you have limited resources, you can generally, you know, if you cast the net wider, you can generally pick up bargains, and that's very unlike everybody else. When he had a guy like, they had Nathaniel Chaloba from Chelsea on loan. This dude never played, and I don't know if it was because I don't know why. I assume he speaks English, and it was almost as if, like, you know, this guy kind of disrupts our working class ethos. And I think Deitch even said, like, I want to reward the guys who got us here. But I've just been struck by the guy because he obviously affects a certain look, right? He even referred to himself as the ginger skinhead.
He looks like a policeman.
Yeah, and like some like walking stereotype, like the policeman from like who should be the partner of the guy from With Nail and I, who says get in the back of the van, like, you know, except with a different voice. I don't know.
Get in the back of the van.
Exactly.
Mane, Wanyama, back for Sadio Mane, who's gone to ground, and it's a penalty. Dusan Tadic scores just, but Southampton are back on level terms at 1-1.
This is where Mourinho could have dealt perhaps a knockout blow of some kind, or close to knockout blow. But of course, they drop 2 points because they draw with Southampton, and they give away a lead as well. And they haven't won at Stamford Bridge in the league, I think, in more than a month. Clive, does any of this matter? Is this a hangover from getting knocked out? Are they tired? Is something a little bit wrong?
Well, someone told me the other day, actually, in their last kind of 16 games in all competitions, they've scored first in their last 16 games in all competitions, but only won half of them. I'm not quite sure what you mean is that really, but they do seem to be a bit disrupted at the moment by the current spate of, say, suspensions and injuries to people, to kind of important people. Such as Matic, and Costa hasn't kind of, I know he scored at the weekend, but he's still not quite looking the same kind of guy. And so certainly Matic isn't. And Fabregas just seems to be, I don't know, he's almost zombie-ish at the moment.
The fact that they're in this condition and playing like this in March, in other words, not playing very well, showing wear and tear, surely that wasn't part of Mourinho's plan. What went wrong?
Well, I think we've probably mentioned it before on this very podcast, but he keeps a very small squad. He doesn't like rotation. This is going to... I think we probably predicted in December it would come back to bite him around Easter time. It's just come a bit early. It's just you can't fight on all fronts, which he was until quite recently, with such a small squad. You just can't, especially with certain players who we all know have this label of drifting out during the season,
Oscar.
Like Oscar, for example.
You know, I know that when we speak to Mourinho, we have to ask him questions about the referee or follow whatever he wants to say and so on, because it's all Jose. But I'd love somebody to ask him, like, you know, you've operated differently these last 2 years at Chelsea. You know, why? Did you, is it a different approach? Is it this group of players, you know, and so on? I think it's very interesting. I mean, it's one of those things, obviously, has pros and cons, but I'd love to hear, I'd love people to ask him, like, proper questions and him to be in the mood to give proper answers, because when he does, he's very good.
That's the issue with Jose, that often he's not in the mood to give proper answers, and he doesn't want to, and this isn't, again, judgmental particularly, but he kind of says what he wants to say. He has the message that he wants out, and if you go in with an issue, like most journalists will go to a press conference with an issue in mind that they want to talk to the manager about, and if you go to Jose and you say, Jose, really interested in your use of your squad, and you know, you rotated more at Real and at Inter than you are doing now. Why is that? What's decided that? He will give you a one word, one sentence answer, and then look at you like you're a moron, and then he will say what he wants to say anyway, and that will be so often outrageous and sort of incendiary that you have to use that anyway. So
it was his big thing at the start of the season. There were several press conferences at the beginning of the season when the transfer market was still open, and he really emphasised that his priority, his absolute priority, was to make sure his squad was not meandering all over the place, that he wanted to keep it tight and small. So he had, this isn't an accident, it was something he felt was important, and it worked well. Got them off to a flying start, and now it's proving that there's a downside.
I think one other factor has been Nemanja Matic. I mean, Clive, you touched upon it as well, but he was outstanding for the first part of the season. Then he gets himself suspended, and he's back, and he's not fully fit. Is he struggling? I mean, has there been a drop-off in Matic as well? Is that something that should be worrying?
It's always hard to tell, isn't it? It's hard to tell whether it's the drop-off in Matic or is the drop-off that Fabregas, who's tanked completely in the second half of the season, is it that he's struggling a bit more, so Matic is having to do more work, he's more exposed, and that puts him in more dangerous situations? It's hard to tell what the symptom and what the cause is.
Anybody want to argue that Southampton still have a shot at the top four? No?
Of course they have a shot.
Yes. All right. Who's got more of a shot, Southampton or Spurs?
Southampton, they're more consistent in their output. They defensively look solid. There have been a series of wonder goals that have breached them, but on the whole they look incredibly solid, whereas Spurs, they go up and down and it's just very unpredictable.
It's a fair point, actually. They did have Coutinho and Shelvey in the space of about 4 days. And that is a bit harsh.
I had a bunch of games when they were quite unlucky earlier in the year, like the first game against United and whatever else. Yeah,
I don't honestly. I know. I do bow down to the god that is Ronald, but I just can't think of a game in which Southampton's defence have looked appalling.
Does Koeman have a case for manager of the year? I mean, I know everybody's saying like,
of course he does.
It's going to be Dyche if they stay up, right? You would assume. But does Koeman have a shot? Would he be your choice over the gravelly voice?
Well, let's see. If he finishes top four, that is the story of the season, and of course he's manager of the season, without doubt.
Even if Dyche stays up?
Yeah. It's still Southampton. Yeah. Southampton gets
in
the Champions League.
The Champions League,
given
is
what they went through in the
story.
Summer. Yeah. It's not the story of the season, it's the story of football, of all football of all time, since the Bible.
Of all time. It's the greatest story ever told.
It's the reason that Alison mentioned the Bible, obviously, is there was that great season when Nazareth FC made the Champions League.
Exactly.
Well, that's a shocking mistake by Bendeleb, typical of what we've seen, really. And Rooney, he's got past Dyer and scores! It's 3-0. The knockout blow supplied by Wayne Rooney. Tottenham really on the ropes now.
Right, moving on to United and Spurs. This was probably United's best performance of the season, the one where we finally see the Van Gaal vision, and might I add, not coincidentally, we see the 4-3-3, which is where Van Gaal certainly has done his best work.
You do have to ask whether were United that great and they made Spurs look that bad, or were Spurs that bad and they made United look that great? It's hard to know which one of the two it is. Spurs were complicit in their own demise. That melted away in front of. I mean, it was a great finish from Rooney, but there's no way he should have got through. It was like a sort of snake-hipped, jinking run. He ran in a straight line, and the defenders all sort of fell out of his way, like to maintain the biblical theme, like the parting of the Red Sea.
And that the 4-3-3, and he finally found this formation. But I mean, they didn't have to do anything. I mean, Harry Kane still managed to run around and do quite a lot, because he had to. He was making tackles and winning the ball to set things up in there, because he was getting absolutely... It was the easiest day that back four will have for some time. And I think I saw somewhere that, you know, all Smalling and Jones, they looked like they could be... I thought, well, they had nothing to do, because the people they were meant to be keeping out of the game were being kept out of the game by their own teammates, because there was no service.
All right, so there's no conclusions to be drawn about United here. Because I was looking at it, and it's funny, because you know how I often in England there's an obsession on pace, and you need pace, and every defender fears pace, and running in behind, and all these nonsensical things that people sometimes say. But I look at it, this is possibly, like, if you had to assemble a slower 11, Van Gaal, you'd probably struggle. I mean, lots of talent there, but, you know, other than Young and the central defenders, and maybe Valencia, there's nobody you would describe as particularly.
Even Yun isn't.
Yeah, no, he's fast,
but he's not kind of
relative yeah. to Mata yeah. and Rooney yeah. and Carrick and Fellaini and Ander Herrera and Daley Blint.
They move the ball a bit quicker.
They move. No, they're quick thinking yeah. and they're skillful players.
But that was the thing I sort of noticed yesterday. They did kind of move the ball quicker and with a more sort of forward intent than they had done in the last couple of games I'd seen them. Whether that was, as you say, Mata finally came back in and may have enjoyed his return to the team, I don't know. But yeah, they didn't rely on getting in behind. They just moved the ball a lot quicker than they had done, I guess.
But could this be a blueprint for maybe? I mean, obviously, you'll work starters back in. Rojo presumably will come back in. And I don't know that Daley Blint can play left back in the Premier League, given the number of extremely quick wingers there are out there, although it looked like Ross Townsend didn't create any trouble for him whatsoever. But could this be more of perhaps a blueprint in terms of shape and in terms of the types of players?
Yeah, they look a lot better in the form.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
3-3, and one of the weirdest things about the season is how long it's taken Van Gaal to work out that certain systems don't work. And
especially the system that he's used for like the first 15 years yeah. of his life.
But he seems to have given, was it Ollie who wrote it? I can't remember if it was Ollie who wrote it or somebody else, that he's given every system, whether it's 3-4-1-2, 3-4-2-1, 4-3-3, 4-4-2, the diamond or whatever, he's given each of them like four or five games when it's been pretty obvious. All right, fine, you can say one game might be an exception. You might want to try it for longer. But he spent the entire season looking at these systems that everyone else can see aren't working and thinking, after ages, and this is one of the best coaches of the last 20 years, after eventually thinking, maybe this isn't working, I'll try something else. And they've had this 4-3-3 system that whenever they've used it, they've looked better than anything else. But he seems to have been reluctant to try it. And I find that odd.
We should mention Marouane Fellaini, Alison, because this is a guy who had Rory's mate, Rafa, managed to not screw it up royally against Athletic Bilbao, and had he not had a boo-boo on his foot back in August, he wouldn't even be here. He would have gone to Napoli on loan. And now suddenly he's arguably United's best player against Tottenham, and is having a big, big impact. I don't know, I'm always struck when you see players who, they come, they disappoint, and then they come back. It is kind of a feel-good story, right? Does he have a future at United? Is he somebody Funhaus should be building around next season?
Yeah, no, he's been useful almost all season for him, whether he's come off the bench or just been there as a possibility. And finally, Van Gaal seems to be trusting him more, embracing him more. There was a feeling earlier in the season that Van Gaal was sacrificing too much by bringing Fellaini on, that he was sacrificing discipline and shape, and that he was some sort of, he'd go off and do his own thing and be a bit unpredictable. But they're all the things that opponents really hate as well. I think it's the sort of player, if you put faith in him, he can terrorise. And I don't really see why any manager should be cautious about unleashing a player who can terrorise. I hate the word unplayable. I'm trying to think of another one. But I mean, Spurs just didn't seem to know what to do about him.
What I liked about this is it almost seems like you have a platform around him, right? You've got obviously Herrera and Carrick who can pass and move, and maybe going forward you put Blint for Carrick and Rojo at left back or whatever, or Shaw, or put Rojo in center defense or whatever. And then in front of him you've got Mata and Young wide who provide outlets and creativity. And again, and if you want to mix it up, you put Di Maria when he's available again, and maybe Yana's eye. And then you've got Rooney, who can finish. And while Van Persie's out and Falcao's star-crossed, why not? I mean, this looks to me it's a rational system. It gets your best players onto the pitch when they're available.
In roughly the right positions.
Well done, Louis. You know, we got there in the end.
Yeah, we did. And the only reason I think there's any reason to be slightly cautious about saying, oh, United are back, is because it is one game. They've got a really tough run coming up.
He'll change to some weirdo formation next week. We'll get more Tyler Blackett in centre forward.
You would hope not, but he's done some weird stuff this season, Van Gaal, so you can't rule it out. And I think the other thing is that there have been times this season against Newcastle, against QPR, when United have played well and you've assumed, right, this is it now. They've found their way. And they haven't. And I remember in 1994, I think, Liverpool went to Swindon. Liverpool had been terrible for 3 years. They went to Swindon and they won 5-0 at the start of the season. And it was on the news, the actual BBC News, saying, Liverpool are back. And Liverpool weren't back. It was just a flash in the pan. And this season there has been this...
Wasn't that because Graham Souness was in charge?
I can't remember. I can't remember the exact... It was whatever year Swindon won the Premier League. But Liverpool won 5-0 at County Ground. And there has been the same process at play with United this season. I remember watching Match of the Day earlier this season. And I think Jonathan Pearce said... They went 1-0 up against someone, and Jonathan Pearce said, well, the floodgates will be open now. And you think, why will they be open now? You wouldn't say that about Chelsea or Man City. You'd say they need a second to make it comfortable. With United, it was the floodgates will be open now. As soon as they went 2-0 up against Spurs, who we didn't know at that stage would be terrible throughout the game. Martin Tyler said, they'll be thinking they can catch Manchester City. And that's fine, they are only 2 points behind with a win. But this is a Man United who were introed into the game by Sky, saying Louis van Gaal needs a result and he needs a performance. They scored 2 goals in half an hour, and suddenly you're saying they're going to catch Man City and finish second. We've seen enough this season of Man United to know that there is work to be done. Just as they've won one game, it's a little bit knee-jerk to start saying, oh, this is it, this is the solution.
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of the False Dawn Party.
Yes, exactly.
I think of False Dawns, actually nothing to do with False Dawns. This Wayne Rooney story,
what's that got to do with False Dawns?
I just said it has nothing to do with False Dawns. For those who don't know, I think it was after the Swansea game, Wayne Rooney had some friends over to his house. I would hope they're his friends. One of them being Phil Bardsley. He of the photograph of the cash in the casino lying on the ground. And they decided, as you do, to put on some boxing gloves and spar in the kitchen. And it was videoed by somebody. And Bardsley catches Wayne Rooney and basically lays him out. At first I thought, this is a fake, he's pretending. But no, Wayne Rooney's not an actor. He falls backwards. He narrowly misses the edge of his breakfast bar. Now, there's a number of issues here, issues with the media. This is Rooney on his own time, in his own kitchen. Obviously, doesn't know he's, or maybe knows he's being videos, never expects the video to come out. Van Gaal almost gave the impression that, this is not important. Clive, it is important, right? Would you have run this video if it had been given to you?
It's the interesting thing about that video, apart from the ferocity of the way that we're going at each other, and Wayne Rooney's excuse that this is what you do when you invite friends around. I'm not quite sure what you were doing on a Saturday night when your mates come around with me, but I don't end up with boxing gloves on. Is actually where it stops, because you do get for the Sun to have run their headline of, he appears to be out cold. The only people saying that is the Sun. And then Mrs. Bardsley comes up and says, well, actually, no, he jumps straight up again. And, that's what you don't see. Well, that's the kind of crux of the matter. I don't think Wayne Rooney is an actor. I think he does
I mean, the important thing about this, it could have been a lot worse. He does miss that breakfast bar by literally inches. The fact that he kind of killed the story with the great goal celebration, but and we can all say it's great now because it would appear there's no adverse effect. But I kind of think, let's say he does hit that floor, suddenly there's Louis van Gaal is not saying it's a twisted world we're living in when Wayne's has to go for that MRI scan. Roy Hodgson isn't going, my England captain is suddenly spark out under a breakfast bar. That isn't a jolly jape. And for a start as well, if assuming the son's right and he was knocked out, there were supposedly big guidelines you'd have had to follow. You know, he'd have had to have gone for checks. He would have been.
And maybe they did that. We don't know, right?
But I get to say, wouldn't it be better after if he did do that? That's what you come out and say. You know, he had been checked out, and actually, it's all over. He was fine. He wasn't. Yeah.
You either say nothing really happened and he was fine, or you say, he did get a knock to the head, and then we went to the heart. You know.
Because that's the bit. As I say, the interesting bit is just that the fact that when it really gets interesting is when the video just kind of stops and he's still lying under the breakfast bar.
It's interesting that players in their insurance deals with the clubs aren't allowed to do loads and loads of dangerous stuff.
You're not allowed to go skiing,
for example. Allowed to ski. Footballers aren't allowed to ski.
Or skydive.
And they're not allowed to ride motorbikes, a lot of them. According to their insurance, they are insured, their professional insurance, whatever it is. The clubs have these clauses saying you are not allowed to do these things. I would presume that boxing is one of those things.
Do you think
it doesn't need to be specified?
No, I would
assume... Because they assume that people will not have boxing matches.
I would assume there's some sort of catch-all clause in many contracts which covers this, and you don't need to go into specifics. It seems obvious to me that if you start boxing with somebody, especially somebody like Phil Bardsley, who, you know, is... She's a bit unhinged, but obviously he took it very, very seriously. He didn't seem to be bothered that he was beating up the England captain.
He's Scottish. Why should he?
Exactly. Maybe that's part of the plan. But it just seems so... I don't know. It just seems like such bad judgment. Mm-hmm. And the other level of bad judgment is this. I appreciate when you're a celebrity, you've got hangers-on and so on. But Wayne Rooney allowed somebody into his own house, who he could not trust, who then takes the video and then sells it, because I'm sorry, I hate to make assumptions here.
Actually, you don't know that, do you? I mean, you know it ended up in somebody's hands, but you don't know how far down the line of...
It's still that it somebody who exercised bad judgment. Like, basically, I presume Rooney and Bardsley knew they were being videoed, right?
Yeah.
The minute this happens, if I'm right, Rooney was presumably knocked cold. If I'm Phil Bardsley, I think... Or whatever servants or family members Rooney might have had. I don't know if Colleen was there or whatever. First thing you say, okay, that video, like, let's erase this right now so as not to...
We kind of live in a world where everybody does things on... You know, it doesn't happen unless someone's got...
Okay, but then somebody in his circle used bad judgment. That's worrying as well.
That would be, my assumption would be that someone has sold it. That would be my assumption. But you don't know in this. It's not just in this era where everything's videoed. It's in this era where everything is shared on WhatsApp and players have these big groups. And that it is bad judgment on a huge number of levels. Whether it was sold or not, I would guess it was.
Whether it was sold or not, Rooney had somebody in his house who's a freaking idiot who goes and shares this with other people, right? I mean, to me, that's the obvious thing. And I think it is a newsworthy story because, as you said, this is the England captain. He's one of the, you know, he's got this in his contract. And, yeah, maybe United did play it correctly. They addressed it. They killed it. He did this celebration. And we move on. And thankfully, Rooney's not hurt. But, you know
what happens when you get a bang to the head? Sometimes it's bad for you. Sometimes you become a gibbering idiot. Sometimes it unlocks all sorts of academic potential. And really seems to have become Churchillian post-knock to the head, giving the team talk ahead of the victory over Spurs and giving very lucid press conference afterwards. And it was quite a well-choreographed celebration. I think maybe this is one of those cases where the knock to the head has turned him into a super intellectual.
Weirdo Scientific Theories with Alison Rudd. Right, Arsenal pummel West Ham 3-0 to win their fifth on the bounce. Clive, assuming they finish third, get knocked out of the Champions League, and win the FA Cup again. Will it have been an encouraging season for Arsenal, or another one where you Spurs fan mock him for the fourth place trophy?
Well, they probably won't get the, they'll probably get the third place trophy. But that, isn't that what happened last season? You know, that it's
forward progress.
Well, it depends how they finish this season. If they just, you know, they're what, they're 7 points behind the leaders. They're possibly going to win the FA Cup, and they've got knocked out of the Champions League round again. That's the same as last season. It depends how they finish this season. If they show signs that actually this is a team that is moving and can finish strongly and show some promise for next season, where they might actually mount a challenge for the title.
Some folks at Everton potentially getting sucked into the relegation struggle. Ha! Fools! That 3-0 pounding of Newcastle means that everything is going to be okay for your pal and my pal, Roberto Martinez. Right, Rory?
Well, they're, what, 6 points clear? Six, 7 points clear of the relegation zone now?
Yeah, it's fine.
They're
rubbish beneath them.
They're not going to get relegated. Hull are going to get relegated. So, yes, in that sense, everything will be fine, but there are some difficult choices for Martinez to make. They need younger players, they need more players, they need better players, because they've been far too easy to shut down this season.
Sunderland find themselves 4-0 down at halftime. Fans are angry, they leave early, they throw their season tickets and plenty of abuse at Gus Poyet. Alison, is it acceptable to go and hurl abuse and season tickets at the manager of your football club?
I don't believe any fan should boo their own team or... let alone throw things at the dugout.
What if Julio is managing?
There's a contract. There's a contract. You go there to support. That's what it's called.
Even
don't
if it's
don't turn up if you can't do it.
Even if it's Julio?
Even if it's Julio.
Of course, the team that put four past Kostel Pantilimon in one half were Aston Villa, whose revival continues under terrible Tim Sherwood. Clive, somebody on this podcast said he needs, quote, coaching lessons. I don't remember who it was. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter. I don't know if anybody wants to take ownership of this. It might have been that nasty little Matt Hughes, who's not with us today. But Clive, you get a chance to apologize on behalf of every guest we've ever had.
I'm still not going to say that Tim Sherwood is the answer to every managerial play going. I mean, you know, he had, what was it, 20-odd games at Tottenham with his 59% win record, and he's had, what, four Premier League games as manager of Aston Villa and got a 50% win record, is that right?
That's pretty good.
It's four games. Come on, if we're taking samples, that's never going to get him in it. Can we at least get him out of a honeymoon period at the two clubs he's actually been at and actually find out whether he is a good coach or not?
You'll find out soon enough at Wembley. QPR lose at Crystal Palace and their lot just keeps getting worse. Rory, looks like a slippery slope. And will you look into your crystal ball and tell me where they're going to be in 6 months' time?
My suspicion now is that they will be in the Championship. If they refuse to pay their whopping rate fine, that they might end up much, much lower down than that. But I think that's so unlikely. And it would be such a legal wrangle. It would last for years, that it's in everybody's interest to get it sorted out. For QPR probably to pay a substantial portion of that fine, I think that's probably what will happen. Does it could be up to sort of 50, 58 million quid, which seems excessive. They've said they're going to fight it. I think they will fight it. I don't think they'll fight it successfully. I think they'll be in the Championship with a transfer embargo, and there will be 30 or 40 million pounds lighter of pocket.
Nigel Pearson's Leicester City get a scoreless draw at home against Hull, but the big man loses his cool when the Sunday Times' Paul Rowan asked them something about whether Leicester's season was waxing or waning, and Pearson goes all surly and seemed to mock him and sounded like he called him something that rhymes with trick. Alison, I bet no manager has ever called you names like that.
This sounds like the prompt for an anecdote.
I'll be soliciting anecdotes from all of you.
The worst insult was, this goes way back to the days when Ken Bates owned Chelsea. And if you did Chelsea in Europe, Bates would hold a sort of press conference, a press briefing, and invite you along by telephone. You get a phone call saying, Ken requires your presence at this hotel. And I walked in, and I was one of the last to arrive. And he'd planned this, Ken Bates. And as I walked in, he pulled out a comb, a big comb from his pocket, and said, ah, she'll be needing this. And everyone laughed because everyone was sycophantic to Ken Bates. And that was just rude, because in those days my hair was really wild and long. Beautiful, but long and wild.
What a weirdo, Ken Bates. Seriously. Yeah. Rory, do you have an anecdote you want to share?
About being insulted by a manager. I don't know if I've ever been... I don't know if a manager has ever... like, actually called me a rude word. I'm sure they've thought it. Roy Hodgson and I might have had a clash or two.
Let me guess, when he was at Liverpool.
When he was at Liverpool. Mind you, everyone's got a Roy Waugh story from Liverpool.
Clive?
No, I don't think anyone. I don't think anyone. I don't think. I've probably all been quite scared, just in case they stepped over the mark and realised who they're insulting. But no, I don't think so. I think they've all been perfectly wonderful people.
Were it not for Allison's Ken Bates and his Colm story, this whole anecdote of being insulted by manager segment would have been extremely lame, and it would have been a lot better, obviously, if Tony Evans were here, because of course he has many, many, many stories.
It'd been quicker to say who hasn't. Tony Evans.
My favorite one was the one when Martin O'Neill, he had some issue with Martin O'Neill, and Martin O'Neill like sent him a message saying like, "I'll be at the training ground at like 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. You can ring me then." Like, as if Tony's really going to wake up at 7 during freaking Martin O'Neill.
Dale, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
As we saw last week and in the previous month, French football is now better than English football. And it was a big weekend in what Mark Lawrence refers to as Ligue 1. So please, can you tell us what happened?
What didn't happen, Rory? It was an incredible weekend. PSG somehow contrived to lose at Bordeaux. They lost 3-2. Zlatan Ibrahimovic went absolutely bananas afterwards. He walked around shirtless, shouting in English, which was interesting that he'd be shouting in English rather than perhaps his native Swedish, basically saying that the country was rubbish, the referees were rubbish, they're all amateurs. A bit about the country, he actually used another word, which rhymes with spit, but it's not really clear if he said that, but he certainly felt that way about the referees. He's now risking a ban and makes PSG seem even more unpopular, although some of the officiating probably does have a point. And crucially, Marseille played Lyon, and again, Lucas Ocampos, on loan from Monaco, scores, but the ball crosses the line, but no GLT in France, not even people standing behind the goal, so it's not given. And I wonder if that goal could end up determining the champions of Le Championnat. Right, that's all we've got time for this week. If you haven't subscribed on iTunes and Player FM for Android, please do so now. I can see Clive has his phone out. No doubt that's what he's doing. Many thanks to my guests today, Alison Rudd, Clive Petty, and Rory K. Smith. Check out thetimes.co.uk on your digital device. Members will get exclusive football, rugby, and cricket highlights. There's a Cricket World Cup right now, right? If you're not a member yet, you can take our £1 digital trial today. You can just search Times Sport online. We'll be back. Same bat channel, same bat place, same bat time next week. Bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.